Hello, creative people. Welcome to Creative Conversations. My name is Hollis Citron, and we are so truly happy that you have chosen to spend this hour with us. So, a little background on the podcast. I am owner and founder of I Am Creative and Express Yourself Publishing. My mission is to expand that quote-unquote societal definition of creativity beyond a pencil and a paintbrush and empower people, especially adults, to own their talents that come in so many different forms. So I've created this space so that I can get to talk to people that have all different jobs, hobbies, and interests, and we get to have a conversation about their experiences and perspectives, all centered around three questions. One, how do you define creativity? Two, how do you incorporate it into your life? And three, why do you think it's important? Then we have a free-flowing conversation and we see where it goes from there. So I have had the honor to have spoken to entrepreneurs as young as 13, handwriting specialist, biologist, personal organizer, doctor, lawyer, and so many more. And the idea is that by sharing their stories, we get to explore the space of expressing yourself, giving yourself permission to take time for your interests and explore possibilities. And by doing all of this and incorporating it into your world daily, I promise you will feel more empowered, connected, and dare I say, happy. So, let me introduce my inspiring guest for today is
Lauren Siegel. Lauren is 61 years young and a lover of life. She has been running for 46 years, still racing competitively and still having fun. Lauren is a streak runner, meaning she runs every day without fail. Amazing. She has not missed a day of running in over 21 years. She is ranked number 10 in the world among female streak runners. You can say that running is a huge part of her life. And I am so excited to be talking to Lauren today.
Good morning.
There we go. Hi. You did it. So how long did you actually live on Barclay Road for? I was thinking about it this morning and I was like, how long have we actually known each other?
I lived on Barclay Road for 29 years.
Okay. And
my intention was to never leave Barclay Road, but I did. I had to. But you know, it was a great street. It was like a throwback to the 50s. You know, all the neighbors knew each other, and we had barbecues and parties, and the kids all played. It was just, you know, it was great. When I moved in, you were in high school, I believe.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes sense.
And Matthew was 15.
Yeah.
A long time ago.
Yes, a long time ago. But you're so right. It really was a time of, kids played outside. There were so many kids on the street. Like, you played until it was dark. You drank out of the hose. There were barbecues. Just so many beautiful memories.
Yeah, my kids, especially my older kids, feel very fortunate that they had that kind of experience. Because, you know, even back then, a lot of kids didn't. You know, the streets didn't have as many kids, or the kids just weren't the same age groups. Or, you know, but my kids were, you know, outside playing, like you said, morning to night, drinking from the hose, going down to Tookany Creek, throwing pebbles in there. And, you know, it was a great time to be a kid. Parents weren't so much of a helicopter parent back then.
Yeah.
I think it needs to get a little bit back to the middle. I think, you know, one extreme, either extreme is not good. I think meeting in the middle would be good.
Yeah, agreed. Totally agree on that. Actually, during this whole time of the pandemic and all of that, like, I live here now in South Jersey and we're in a condo, and it would usually be, for all the years we've lived here, which is like 19 years, which is insane, it's very quiet. My mom would always say it looks like a movie set. She's like, do people come out? Like, every once in a while you'd see people. But during the pandemic, all of a sudden kids are playing outside. People are outside walking. It became kind of like a throwback. We would go on tons of walks and tons of people would be out. Kids are riding bikes. One parent yelled to me one time, have you seen so-and-so, you know, this kid that around this age on a blue bike? Because if you do, tell him his mom's looking for him. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is, I feel like I'm actually in a neighborhood. Like this is like a really nice element to it. I didn't know all these kids lived here. Didn't know all these people, you know, that were kind of younger. I always thought it was older people living here. So anyway, it just was nice. And it's kind of, you're not hearing it as much lately, which is kind of a bummer.
It is nice. I've noticed that. I've moved into my house a little over 2 years ago. So, you know, there was always people walking around, but now, but definitely during the pandemic, a lot more people. And the weird thing is everybody's walking in the street. Like, get out of the street.
It's so true. Yes.
Walking in the street. I mean, I run in the street, but that's different. But yeah, we're lucky because in the next three houses, two of the houses have five kids each and one has two. So there's 12 kids in between three houses right kind of next to me. And it's great because they're always out playing. They're skateboarding, they're riding their bikes, they're playing basketball. So it kind of reminds me, and I see them running back and forth through to each other's houses and to other kids' houses in the neighborhood. And it kind of reminds me of, you know, when my kids were young. And, you know, it's nice that those kids do that. They're not just inside on their screens all the time.
Yeah, it's the energy behind it. It's so important. So, Lauren, your story is just like amazing. And I know we're going to dive into things deeper as we talk, and we'll just see kind of where the conversation flows to around the questions. But do you want to give people maybe a little bit more of a background besides, I mentioned your running streak, but when I was reading your bio, which was a lot longer, I'm just, the whole, you're running, first of all, the fact that you've been running for 21 years straight, I mean, 46 years, but 21 years straight is just like, oh my God. But what really hit me too is just the emotion and the empowerment of what running really means to you. So maybe if you could just go a little bit, you don't have to do a deep dive because we'll talk more, but tell a little bit more about who you are. That'd be great.
Well, you know, I am a runner and I take it very seriously. But I don't want people to think I'm one dimensional. You know, I have other interests and other loves too. But yes, I guess my day, especially the first thing in the morning, does center around running. It gets my head set for the day, kind of rearranges all my circuitry in my brain, you know, and then doing it first thing in the morning gets done. Nothing else can get in the way to interrupt it, especially when you have a running streak. You know, that's important to me and to other streak runners. You know, we want to get it done. There aren't a lot of streakers that don't run till late at night and they're squeaking it in at, you know, 11:45 at night before midnight. But that's not me. And I don't want to shower twice and do my hair twice and makeup and all that. So yeah, getting it done first thing. And I love the early mornings, watching the world wake up, you know, during, you know, from September to March, it's dark when I go out and it's just getting light when I'm coming home and, you know, just kind of seeing things wake up. It's quiet and people say, like, aren't you afraid out there, you know, by yourself early in the morning like that? I'm like, no. All these years, I've never really had an incident. I think all the crazies are still asleep. And they're not bothering me at, you know, 6 o'clock in the morning. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's been, you know, when I started running, it was for other reasons, and my reasons for continuing to run have evolved through the years, as I'm sure, you know, people's lives change, and whatever you do, your reasons for doing so change.
Yeah, definitely.
It's always been there, and thank you, you know, for saying how, you know, amazing it is. But to me, it's not, because I always say anybody can run every day, or walk every day, or do something every day to move. You know, you just have to take the time and make the effort to do so. And, you know, people know me as this, you know, great longtime runner, and You know, I live and breathe running, and they're always surprised when I tell them there's plenty of days and I don't feel like doing it. You know,
I get up
and I'm just like, I want to stay in bed. I don't want to get up. I don't want to run. I'll just go sit at my table and drink a cup of tea and read the paper or whatever. But then I think, well, I could do that in an hour after I get back or however long I'm going to run that day. So I always tell people, you'll never regret going for a run. And I think you can change that verb from run to walk or yoga or dance or hula hoop or whatever. I just think that people need to move. Mm-hmm. It's so important for your bodies to move, and whatever your passion or your love is, or if you don't have one, go find one.
Yeah.
And yeah. That's important, you know, to have something, and especially movement. So anybody could do it. It's just, and I've been doing it so long, like, I don't even think about it at this point. It's not if I'm going to run. It's, you know, depending on what race I'm training for, it's my training plan for that day or that week.
Yeah.
It's, you know, how far am I going to run?
Yeah. Well, I love what you're saying, and it's that how you started off by saying that you don't want to be considered like a one-dimensional character. And I totally get that, because people see this one thing and they're like, oh, because we get put into these containers or these categories. It's like, well, Lauren's the runner and Hollis is the art teacher and this person's the business person. Like, we get put into these things because of what you're noticed for. But then I like how you evolved into the talking about that it's a morning routine for you. And this is what your morning routine looks like. Some people don't really think what they're doing is so much a morning routine. They're not so aware of it. It could be getting up, you know, making that drink that you make, sitting and, you know, reading something or whatever. That could be your routine. Some people wake up and meditate before they even get out of bed. Then they brush their teeth and then they have their drink and they go for a walk. It's like people have the different routines that they have that become kind of their centering space. But some people don't have that, and it kind of creates a little bit of craziness. Or you're like, why don't I feel centered? Why do I feel all over the place? And it's because you kind of don't have that kind of ease into the day instead of jumping into the day. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yes, that makes sense. Yes.
Because I've been guilty of that many a times, I have to say. It's like I'll just get up and jump, like, well, I got to do this, this, and this. And then I'm like, God, it feels so much better when I take time to ease in and be peaceful and, like, for me, slower movement and, you know, journaling and that kind of thing. It feels good. And then the rest of my day is like a lot clearer.
Well, it's good that you recognize that. You know, a lot of people don't. They don't. But, you know, the fact that you recognize that and act on it and try to get it done, you know, probably makes you feel better about life.
Yeah. Yeah. Because, like you said, with running, it's like you feel like at times you don't want to do it, but you know that you're going to feel better after you do it, and you can do all these other things. It's going to get you into that good headspace where you're waking up early, it's quiet, you're alone, you're with your, you know, you're seeing the beauty of what's around you, and then you can start your day.
Right. And, you know, on the days that I'm not as into it, I guess, for lack of a better word, you know, I always say, well, you know, I'm going to look for something, you know, beautiful out in the world or unusual, or, you know, you never know what you'll see. Like, 3 days this week, I saw foxes running around, and 3 separate days in a row, I saw fox.
Wow. And,
you know, or birds, or, you know, today a dog I see all the time just laid down on the sidewalk and insisted I rub his belly. So of course I had to stop for 3 minutes and rub Piper's belly, because I wouldn't do that to her. I have to, you know, the dog wants me to greet them, I am right. To greet them, because I love dogs.
Right.
So it's little things like that that make it worth it.
Right. But then again, it's kind of like that idea of awareness, right? So it's something that may not be comfortable. It's something where you're maybe not in the right mindset, but then it's kind of tweaking it and thinking, okay, well, I made the commitment to doing this. So let me look for this beautiful thing today, or let me notice things today. Something to motivate.
Yes, it definitely is a motivator on days that you need motivation.
Okay, so this is going to be good. So before we dive into the questions, I want to acknowledge the people that are here live. So thank you so much for being here live. To ask any questions or make any comments, please put them in the chat box where we can see them. So we're going to start off with a would you rather, and then we'll dive into the first question. So, Lauren, would you rather live in a place with a lot of trees or live in a place near the ocean?
Can I do both?
Yes.
That's hard because I love both.
You could.
I love trees. I love the woods. I love, trail running and or just walking in the woods and seeing all the varieties of trees. But then I also love the ocean and the waves and, laying on the beach. So that's a tough one.
I know, right?
I'll just have two houses and go back and forth. That's all.
There we go. Or a friend of mine lives in California in this amazing place in more northern California where it's a combination of both. So there we go. I don't remember the name. So, okay. So, Lauren, the first question is, how do you define creativity?
Well, this is a tough question for me. And
I know.
I told you because I don't feel like I'm a creative person. So what I did is I cheated a little bit. So I looked up definition of creativity and I found this article. I hope it's okay to share it.
Of course.
Five characteristics of creativity. So I thought, well, okay, what's the first one? So it says there's five key characteristics of creative people. The first one is flexibility. So to have your mindset be a flexible thinker. Try not to be overly focused on one way of doing things and be open to innovation. Understanding when something's not working and then change to a different solution or approach. So I thought, well, I do that. I am very, some things in my life are very ritualistic. Like I kind of eat the same breakfast every morning, because that's what works for me. So some things, but I think thinking wise, I hope I am flexible. I try to be flexible.
You are.
The second one is a sense of intense curiosity. It says creative thinkers are fascinated with the world around them. They ask a lot of questions and like to discover how things work or the details of beautiful structures. And I am curious about the world and how things are made and how things operate, buildings and everything. So I do have that. I do have intense curiosity. The third one is a positive attitude. So you must have a positive attitude for thinking creatively because this spurs your mind to seek detail, wonder, and solutions. I think I am a positive person. I try not to be a negative thinker because I lived with somebody who was a negative thinker for way too long. So I try to be the opposite. And the fourth one is strong motivation and determination. Well, that I know I have. I know I am, a motivated and determined person. And then the last one is fearlessness, because they say highly creative people believe in the value of the ideas that they come up with. They don't believe about whether the idea is right or wrong, but they believe their idea brings value. Even if people don't agree. So I believe I am fearless in a lot of ways. I wasn't always that way, but I changed my life and became fearless. So
yeah.
So yeah, so I did cheat on the question because I couldn't really think of what creativity means to me, because I tend to equate creativity with being artistic or, you know, musical. Now, I was a ballet dancer for many years, and that was going to be my profession. So I guess I was creative at that point in my life because I loved the movement of dance, of ballet, and listening to the music and, you know, performing the steps and the positions to the beautiful music. So that is my feeling and thoughts about creativity.
So in saying this, first of all, I'm so happy that you looked it up. There's not one right way of doing this. So there's no cheating or anything like that. Like, I'm really glad that, first of all, you know, that you're open enough to be like, I don't consider myself to be this way. So I had to go look it up to kind of see what it meant. And by looking it up, you saw that within all five of those categories, you fall into all those five categories. So
yes, I'm more creative than I thought.
So after you read this, honestly, how did it make you feel?
I realized that I'm thinking about creativity the wrong way, that it's not just about being able to paint or sculpt or write compositions, musical compositions. It's how you live your life and how you think and the way you look at the world.
Yes. Exactly. This is the whole mission of my whole company. Like, this is my company. And I started this because 30 years of being an art teacher and teaching in so many different kinds of scenarios, with all different kinds of ages, traditional and non-traditional settings, meaning from homeless shelters to schools, to my own businesses, working with just in urban settings, suburban settings, special needs, general education, just everybody, working professional developments. And what I found consistently throughout is people have very strong beliefs of what, if I say, you know, you say, what do you do? What do you do? I'm an art teacher. Oh, I can't draw or paint. I'm like, well, neither can I. Like, I went to art school, but that isn't what I do. It's not my voice. It's not my expression. So I found that for so many years, it was kind of what I had been saying. It was like my mantra. Well, what do you enjoy doing? You don't have to be like amazing at this. It could just be a fun exploration for you. But what actually like lights you up? What do you enjoy? What's more of your passion? And a lot of times I'm like, well, that's your creativity, because it's the formation of an idea or an object. And we do this all the time. And when people see it, just like you read these five things, when they look at it in a different way, then their whole mindset changes.
Yes, and that's one of the keys. They said the flexibility, changing the way you think.
Yeah. Yeah, because if you're a very structured, I mean, how do you, if you're very structured, like, well, it's only one way, it can only be that way, it can't be any other way. I mean, you think about how things got invented. What, I mean, Edison had to create the light bulb like 15,000 times. He failed like 14,999 times and got it on the 15,000th time or whatever. So if he gave up before and was just like, screw it, I can't do this anymore, which he probably did have times where that happened, but he kept going. It was just like, I'm going to be kind of fearless. All these people that are telling me I can't do it, it's ridiculous, da, 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 and just followed through and did it. And it got created. It's pretty amazing.
It is. Yeah, it's that way with medicine and a lot of things. You know, I mean, look at, you know, creating the vaccine for coronavirus. You know, how many times did they do that? You know, I'm sure in the labs. Many, many times till, you know, they found the right concoction.
Right, right. And then those things that get created by accident, or maybe like, I just thought of like the Q-tip. Like, I don't know the story behind that, but it's just all of a sudden that kind of idea pops into somebody's head and they're like, like that here, that sense of intense curiosity. Will our ears get dirty? Instead of sticking our fingers in there, what could we create?
Right, the cucumber won't fit.
That won't fit. So it's kind of like check, won't fit, check, won't fit. So that curiosity. So actually this list that you read off is very helpful.
Oh, well, thank you. Here I thought I was cheating, but I did admit that I cheated.
You did.
I didn't sneak it by the teacher.
But it's a really good guideline, I think, for people to kind of hear that, because a lot of people don't see themselves within that, within the realm. But I really, truly have seen that when that understanding of the expansion of what the definition is, for people to understand that, that what they do is that extension of themselves has validity and is the creation, because we are creators. We're creating all the time, whether, you know, then they literally stand up straighter and have better connection with themselves, because they feel better about themselves, which means they feel better in relating to other people, because they just feel better about themselves. You know what I mean?
Right, right. If you don't feel good about yourself, then not much else is going to work.
No, right? It really does all stem from within.
Yes, and some people can, and I did that for a long time. I compartmentalized pieces of my life, and the pieces that weren't working were, you know, shoved to one side. So the other pieces could work, but
yeah.
I don't know if everybody can do that. I was able to do that for a long time, but you know, it's not the ideal way to live either.
I mean, for you, I mean, you really have, I mean, because of Emily with who has special needs and with your stressful marriage, you really had to kind of compartmentalize and put things within their space. And then the running was really, and then you're going to share with us whatever other kind of outlets you had in order to be able to keep yourself sane right now, for lack of a better word.
No, that's true. Sane is the right word.
Mm-hmm.
I was trying to stay sane in an insane life.
Yeah. Yeah, because maybe because with Emily, Emily has been, she is very reliant on you.
Yes, still is. I mean, she's 27, but I'm still Emily's lifeline.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and always has been, and, you know, probably always will be. It's not always the easiest situation to be in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, me. I mean, her life is difficult enough. But for me, you know, I've been a parent for, you know, I mean, my mom always says you're never over being a parent, but I've been a full-time parent for 38 years now, because my oldest is 38. And, you know, truthfully, I'm ready for a break.
Yeah.
I get resentful. I just want to live my life. I'm tired of responsibilities a lot of the time.
Yeah.
And now I have more responsibility than ever, not just with her, but my almost 90-year-old mother lives with us, who is not easy.
Mm-hmm.
So I have one extreme to the other.
Mm-hmm.
But I should count my blessings, right?
Well, but I think it's an honest, I think if you don't express, you repress. So it's important to be able to say how you're feeling and then be able to take action on whatever that looks like, to be able to do these things for yourself. in order to bring yourself more joy. So, but I think you're speaking honestly and openly about people who have special needs children. It's real.
It is real. And yeah, and an elderly parent too. It won't be around forever, unfortunately, but she does bring a lot of humor to the household too. But yes, your mom has always been one of my role models, seeing how she's done it all these years with your brother.
Yeah.
It's a lot.
Yeah.
He is a great joy to all of us. But, at some point, yes, you want to live your own life. You don't always want to be this person's mom and their lifeline. And, they're so dependent. You just need to escape a little bit here and there.
Right. Which is the perfect segue into the second question, which is how you incorporate creativity into your own life. So I know that's running is one component, but are there some other things that you want to talk about that you enjoy that bring you that escape, that bring you that feeling of happiness or wonder?
Well, I don't really have any other big hobbies. mm-hmm. I'm interested in everything. I read a lot. I read, I read the newspaper every day. I still get the newspaper every day.
The actual newspaper.
Yes. I read a lot of news online. I'm always reading, some sort of book. I'm always reading a book. So I'm a big reader. Mm-hmm. I don't have a lot of other hobbies, I guess. I said that. But I love just being outside. I plant a lot of flowers. So I guess gardening. Mm-hmm. I love putting in. I just ordered 15 more plants this morning. Uh-huh. My sister said, "Where are you going to put those?" And I'll find a spot. But
Are they bigger plants or are they like potted plants?
Well, no, they're for outdoors. They're flowers, mm-hmm. flowering plants, perennials, mm-hmm. a bunch of more perennials. So, we moved in here a couple years ago. So I've been kind of transforming the outdoor space. So the house looks much different than it did when we moved in. Mm-hmm. So, but it's nice because people who walk by, they all comment, "Oh, your house is so beautiful. Jerry, love your flowers."
Uh-huh.
So that's nice. Jerry,
sorry, my phone. Yeah, gardening is just is amazing. And I always get confused of, sorry, my daughter must be absent from school. She just had her prom yesterday and she's sleeping. So school is calling to say she's absent. Okay. So the difference between perennials and what's the other one?
Annuals.
Okay. So annuals, there we go. They come back every year.
No.
No, they don't. I'm wrong.
So I couldn't remember it for a long time either, Hollis. I finally remember it this way. Annuals need to be planted every year. So they don't come back.
Okay.
That's what taught me that. I did the same thing. Annuals come back. No, they don't.
They don't. It seems like it would make sense.
I know. I guess perennials mean they're perennially there. Maybe that's where they got the name. So yeah, so gardening. And I think I missed my calling. I should have worked in greenhouses or at a florist or something, because I love working with plants and flowers, mm-hmm. and things like that. And I do kind of have a green thumb. I don't know a lot of the botanical names, but whatever I grow seems to do well. So I guess I'm doing something right, or maybe I just pick really easy to grow plants.
Well, you're obviously very intuitive with it. Like you just know kind of what to do, know what you're looking for, know what to do, and it just kind of grows.
I guess. I guess. So that's an interest, and I guess that's a form of creativity, is looking at my gardens and deciding what goes where, and you know, what would aesthetically, planning it out with color, you know, varying the colors and the heights and things like that.
Definitely. Yeah.
So there's a bit of creativity that I have. Not much, but a bit.
That's a lot. Stop. It's a lot. Now, music. Do you enjoy music?
Yes. Yes. I've probably been to about, I don't know, close to 500 concerts.
Oh, my gosh.
In my life. I know. Yes. I've seen many bands many times. Still go to a lot of shows, and now shows are coming back. So my boyfriend and I have some tickets for things coming up, and hopefully by next year, everything will be back. Mm-hmm. So I always have music on, in the house or, you know, in the car. I'm always listening to music, and I'm pretty, I mean, classic rock is my thing, but I love the blues. I like a little bit of jazz. I'm not a rap fan. I'm not like a hardcore country fan. Mm-hmm. Other than those two, I like classical music. I'm pretty diverse.
What kind of concerts do you have, like a preference on concerts that you like to go to?
I mean, mostly rock. All kinds of rock. Mm-hmm. Like my favorite band was the Allman Brothers. I saw the Allman Brothers, you know, 50 times. I saw the Grateful Dead about 50 times.
Did you really? Oh, did you follow them? Were you one of these?
Oh, yeah. When I was in high school, especially once I left ballet, I got injured and I had to leave ballet. My friends and I, we would pile in a car and we would just travel up and down the East Coast and sleep in the car, sleep in a tent and go to Dead shows. We would go for like a week or two in the summer. We would just travel around. Yeah, we were hardcore Deadheads.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, my mom was pretty permissive that way. And she said, well, you know, I trust you. I know that you make good judgments. And, you know, I probably made a lot of bad judgments that she doesn't know about, but I didn't end up in jail, so
that's good.
Things were different back then.
Yeah, there is something to be said, that whole thing with the whole parenting thing. Yeah, you do have to trust.
Yes.
What is I know my mom is listening in, and
Hi Susan.
Hi, Mom. But my youngest, our daughter, Skylar, she taught me at a very young age where she would say, well, she started to get more verbal about it when she was a teenager. And she'd say, cause she's 18 now. She'd say, Mom, you realize the more you tell me no, the more I'm going to want to do it. So you realize that, right? I'm like, yes, I do. Thank you for pointing it out.
Yeah, and each generation thinks that they're the first ones that have done this.
Yeah, I know, it's true. But then when you're going through it the first time as a parent, even though she's, you know, your kids are just different in the way you interact with them. Yeah, it's kind of like we're learning it for the first time, even though we may have done it when we were kids. It's a different hat that we're wearing.
Oh, it's so fun when I would get those calls at 4 a.m. from the police station.
Oh, God.
That part of parenting I do not miss.
Oh, God. I got one of those calls, I have to say.
No, I had more than one with more a couple than... of them, so
oh,
I won't
I'm
mention
sorry.
Any names. Not I was...
Oh, God. It is just your blood pressure just goes. I remember I was just like, who the hell is this? What are you talking about? Like, we have your child here. I'm like, oh my God. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So all these things here, you say you're not a creative person. I'm here. You're talking about reading. You're talking about gardening. We're talking about music. Do you enjoy cooking or anything like that?
Well, I have to cook. I have five people living in my house, so I do have to cook.
So you're the cook?
Most nights, yes. Yes. Sometimes, mm-hmm. yeah. I mean, I'm not, I enjoy it, but then sometimes it just begins to be a chore. And, you know, I'm tired of coming up with things to eat because with five people, you have, you know, five different taste buds. And, you know, this one doesn't eat that. And I don't eat this. And you don't eat that. And bit of a chore, but.
Yes. I totally understand that. I do have a question about running for you. When you're running, do you, like, is there stuff going on in your head? Like, do you tell stories in your head? Are you visualizing anything, using your imagination? Are you just trying to shut it down? Like, what kind of goes on? I know it's going to vary, but generally.
I think the chatter in my brain doesn't stop. If I'm alone, I usually have headphones on. I usually have music on, but I can still hear everything going on around me. I have the ones that don't go in the ear. So it's, yeah. You know, I'm just saying this because it's, I know your mother right now is worried about me running with headphones, but
she's okay, Mom.
Don't worry, Susan. I can hear anything. Then I'll realize, oh, I didn't even hear the last song. I'm so deep in my thought. Like, it's kind of a background thing, the music, I guess. Mm-hmm. I ran many, many, many years without music. But lately, I usually have it with me. And it's kind of a treat, you know, kind of a pick-me-up. But yes, there's a lot of things going on in my brain sometimes, you know, thinking about my life, how it's gotten to where it is, and what happened, and a lot of things are really hard for me to think about. So my brain kind of shuts down. It's like a garage door closes when I try to think about the past. I think because it's so painful. But then also I'll think, you know, about, I think about everything, you know, what am I going to do this weekend? You know, what are we going to do? You know, what's the weather going to be? Everything goes through my brain.
So it's not necessarily like this shutdown, this quiet time of visualizing and seeing where you're running or, you know, like being in that space. There's a lot of other stuff going on as well, or can be.
Yes, but I'm always hyper aware of my surroundings, especially there's so many bad drivers, you know, at intersections. You know, I'm very cautious because I just assume that they don't see me. So, you know, I always say I want to live to run another day.
So, right.
So I do notice the surroundings, and I get to, you know, certain parts. Some routes that I run, I get to see, you know, like along Tookany Parkway, there's a great blue heron that's sometimes there. So I'm looking for him, or I'm looking at the ducks or the birds, and, you know.
Yeah.
So I am looking at my surroundings and appreciating my surroundings. And on Sundays, I usually run in Center City, Philadelphia. And a couple of weeks ago, I was standing on the steps of the art museum, and I looked down the parkway, and all the flags of the different countries were fluttering in the wind. And I was just so grateful. I thought, how lucky am I that I get to run in such a beautiful place? You know, where I live is so beautiful, and I have such great places to run. And then, you know, in 20 minutes, I'm down here in the city, and it's a whole different environment, but also beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah.
I am lucky.
It's such an amazing, it's such a great location, really. I mean, like where you live and with the suburbs of the surrounding area of Philadelphia, I mean, things are really generally within close proximity. And yeah, that when you get into the city, it's a whole different vibe. And you don't have to go that far out of the city to get like more of a suburban feel.
Right. Or like being completely in nature, you know, you run up the SRT and you cross Ridge Avenue and you're, you know, on Forbidden Drive, and
Yes.
You look at it, you could be in Colorado, you could be anywhere. It's just,
So true.
it's so beautiful with the rock formations and the water, and you could be anywhere. You know,
Yeah.
it's a very beautiful area.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I
Yeah.
do notice my surroundings.
So one more running question, and then I'll go on to something else. When you're running a full, because you've done full marathons, like how do you get yourself, is it hard to run a full, is that 26 miles?
It's 26.2. And that two can be a bitch.
I'm sure. Not
But
just 26, Alice, 26.2.
yeah, I've done an ultra marathon also, which is 50K, which is 31 miles, and I probably have more of those in my future too. But it's a whole different animal, you know.
Wow. How do you get yourself like, how do you, because that, talk about creative, like that's really, I mean, you get yourself through that. Like, how do you do that?
Well, most people think of it as in segments. You know, you look at the course and, you know, well, here's this 5 mile segment, and then we get to this point, and then we're going to get to that point. You know, it's even, you know, after all these years, sometimes if I'm doing, you know, like a 22 mile training run, I open up the door and I'll be like, oh my God, I'm going to run 22 miles. Like, that's insane. Who does that? But you can't think of it that way. You, like I said, you have to break it up in
Yeah.
your mind, you know, because it can be intimidating. But you know, a lot of planning goes into it. You know, your nutrition along the way, your hydration along the way. So it's not like you just like walk out the door. I mean, some people do, but most people need to plan a little bit.
Which what you're saying kind of goes into so many areas of things, really across the board. I think when anybody's trying to do anything that's a big thing, you have to break it into chunks, and in order for it to, because going from A to Z, that usually doesn't happen. You have to do all the letters in between generally, or you might go B, C, D and then skip to Y, Z, but there has to be chunks in order to make it more doable. And it's going to zigzag. I mean, in other areas. I don't know so much on a run, but there can be things that kind of happen where you have to kind of be flexible.
Oh yes, I've had some really crazy bad experiences during marathons that yes, I had to alter my plans completely because of just weird things that happened, you know, along the way that kind of derailed me. You know, it's a distance. Anytime you get over that distance, weird things can happen.
Didn't you have something where you had to go to the hospital?
No, I didn't. I never went to the hospital. I probably should have. But yeah, in the New York City Marathon, I apparently ruptured a blood vessel in my lower abdomen, and at mile 10, and I had this pain, and then it started swelling, and I slowed down my pace, and I was just angry at myself because I wanted to hit a goal pace. I wanted to qualify for Boston Marathon again, and I was just mad at myself the whole time. Like, oh, you know, I'm not going to hit my goal pace. And every mile, every medical station, I thought, well, I should stop, get this checked out. And I thought, no, they're going to pull me off the course. I just want to finish. I just want to finish. And then I finished. And, you know, I didn't hit my time, and I was angry with myself for a few days. And then I thought about it, and I said, you know, you're an effing idiot. You just ran the New York City Marathon. I was invited to run it because I had a good race up there with another race, and they invited me to run it. I didn't even apply. And I said, you totally missed the New York City Marathon because you were worried that you didn't hit this time. Like, that's really dumb. And after that, you know, it was through no fault of my own. I had this weird medical thing that never happened before or since, you know. And by the time the race was done, it was like I had a grapefruit in my stomach. It was all swollen up. Like, you could have died. Like, who knows what was going on in there? You could have had internal bleeding and died, and you're just worried about this. And what a waste of time. And I completely changed my way of thinking after that. Mm-hmm. You know, in every race, no matter the distance, whatever, you know, as long I train hard, I run my best on that day, and I have fun. And mm-hmm. I can't control anything beyond that. So if that's the case, then I've won.
Exactly. And exactly.
I'm not going to beat myself up anymore because I did it too many times. I beat myself up, you know, for what I considered a substandard performance when things happened like that beyond my control. Mm-hmm. You know, life is short.
Right?
And I tell people, you know, there was a big marathon weekend up in Jim Thorpe this past weekend, and it was 92 degrees up there on Sunday. And that's a really difficult kind of weather to run any distance in. And people were upset. I know a woman, she dropped out at mile 18. And I said, you know, things happen. You did your best. That's all you can do. Like, don't worry. I said, elite people, elite runners, professional runners drop out all the time. Things happen and they realize, you know what? This isn't my day. I'm not going to end up hurt or in a hospital just to finish a race. It's not worth it. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't want to set yourself back 6 months just to crawl over a finish line. So I think newer runners don't understand that. They think, you know, you finish at any cost. If you have a broken leg, you drag your leg for 10 miles. I'm like, well, that's dumb. You're making it worse, you know?
But do you think it's because they're younger, like when you were younger, and they have to learn it in order to get to that point? You just have the perspective?
Maybe. Yeah, maybe. They're just not necessarily younger, but yeah, newer runners. They haven't been doing it as long and seen all the things that can go wrong. And, you know, it's only running.
Yeah.
You know, it's not life or death. I mean, and for me to say that, who hasn't missed a day in 21 years, you know, I pretty much have run through everything, you know, illnesses, injuries, you know, surgeries, deaths, everything. But sometimes you got to know when to pack it in. Mm-hmm.
But I think you're bringing up a really important point that, I mean, we go through, you know, this thing called life where we get so serious and caught up in everything. And this is it. It's the end all be all. It's got to be done, got to be done. And then you get to a certain point, either where something's happened, where it changes our perspective, or we get to a certain age, like, you know, I had the fuck you 50s, you know, I was like, I got to get out of the classroom. Like, I can't anymore. I have to go in this different direction because it's not in me anymore to do this because it's not making me feel good. And I'm not being the best person I can be for my family and for other people. So I need to make a change. So it's being in the moment in order to recognize these things, in order to realize that it's not life or death. It's only, like you said, it's only running. My husband's a TV film editor, and in TV and film, everything is like, hurry up, wait. And he gets to a point where he's like, it's only TV. Like, these people think that it's the end of the world. You got to get it done. And then it really wasn't the deadline. And he's just like, if everybody would just relax a little bit and communicate better, then we'd get it done without everybody running around with a chicken without a head.
I think what you said is so true, especially in my case. You know, when you go through things in life, that, you know, some people kind of coast through life and, you know, don't have a whole lot of things happen to them. And that's, you know, good. But I've had like some really life-changing things happen in my life, and it has changed my perspective. so much, maybe too much, I don't know. You know, I was annoyed with this woman. She was posting on Facebook, you know, her life was ending because, you know, a race was canceled. I mean, the woman was crying for days. I was like, what? Why would you do that? There's another one down the road. And this one, believe me, she is not a, you know, she's a recreational runner at best. This is not her profession. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. I guess I've just become hardened and you know, I just put things into perspective, like what's really important and what's not.
Well, you've had experiences and you've realized what's really, like you said, what's really important and what's not. And you've also, when having this contrast of some really icky stuff happening that you got through and got onto the other side and found this, you know, true, you know, you found you were in this marriage that was very, very difficult. And now you have a man that loves you for who you are in every sense of the word.
Yes.
Which has changed so much. And it's not, I'm just pointing out one thing, like you've had all these other experiences, but in having the contrast of really icky to then realizing, you know what, there's so much beauty and there's so much gratitude and so much love because I've seen so much of this other stuff that wasn't good.
Yes. Yes, I am very fortunate that I have, you know, I have him in my life. You know, Walter's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, as a woman, you have to realize also that, you know, if you're in a situation in a toxic relationship like I was for so long, you know, you have to get out. And I used to say, I'd rather live in a car by myself for the rest of my life and spend, you know, one more day with him.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because I got to the point that that's where I was. I hit bottom. I'd rather live in a car than by myself than have spent one more day.
Right. And yeah. you being the incredibly strong person that you are and going through all of this, you realize that, yes, I'm going to free myself of this for me.
Yes.
For me, and I'm worthy of it. And I'm a strong person and I am going to, you know, you can put the words to it, but I guess I'm just seeing this from the outside of how I see you as literally Superwoman. I do.
Thank you.
I'm not BSing. It's like, I see you as Superwoman.
Well, it took me a long time to realize that I can be Superwoman. I was so manipulated and controlled for such a long time that I didn't feel that way. I didn't feel worthy of anything else. You know, and I did compartmentalize my marriage or my bad marriage. My mom used to say, you know, are you happy in your marriage? I'd say, no. And I said, I'm happy in every other part of my life. You know, that's one part I'm not. And she would say, well, that's no way to live. I couldn't leave it for a long time. You know, I had my youngest daughter and I was home with her. You know, I didn't have a career. It was an impossible situation until I got strong and started planning, you know, a way to get out. And he wasn't happy either. You know, mm-hmm. he told me many times, you know, I'm leaving you. I want a divorce. He'd get the suitcase out. He's leaving. And I'd beg him to stay because I didn't know how I could do this on my own. You know, mm-hmm. I had a child that, you know, was very difficult, very different than she is today due to, you know, good pharmaceuticals for mm-hmm. her. So mm-hmm. I finally, you know, then he turned on me. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't so, we were going to have an amicable divorce. It wasn't, he decided, you know, it wasn't going to be amicable. He didn't want a divorce. He didn't want to split up the assets. So things got even uglier.
Yeah.
And that's, I guess, when I had to turn off a lot of my emotions for a long time.
Yeah.
Fear. I turned off fear, which is still kind of turned off. I don't really have much fear of anything. And I decided that I was no longer going to be controlled, afraid of him, manipulated by him. And, you know, it was a very, very ugly divorce. It took quite a few years, a lot of money. He went through six lawyers because no lawyer would stay with him. You know, my lawyer told me he was the most difficult person he'd ever had to work with. And he said, out of the thousands of divorces I've done, he said, yours is in the top three, if not the most difficult one I've ever done.
Oh, my God.
Yes. I said, well, at least I'm winning at something.
Oh, but you
it's
know
a shame because it could have been so different. You know, I'm the type of person, like my parents got divorced when I was four. They stayed friendly. My dad would come over to pick us up on Sunday mornings for the day, and my stepdad would make him dinner. And they're still friendly to this day, you know. And it's just a shame that it couldn't have been that way, because I am capable of having, I could have had an adult relationship, you know, with him, not act like a child, like he's done all the, you know, for these few years. But he wasn't capable of that.
Right, so. Right. But you've gotten to the point where you've gotten where, again, it was that contrast, and you freed yourself and totally different life now. And yes. I want to acknowledge Moonfeather here. That's the name that this person has given themselves, said that running has helped me lose 30 pounds over the past year. Wow.
Wonderful.
That's amazing. Did you run before? I'm curious if you ran before or if this is new for you. If you could put that in the chat. So we're at the top of the hour. We're a little bit past, but I want to ask you the third question and then we're going to wrap up, Lauren. So wrapping everything up. So why do you think creativity is important?
From the five topics that or the five qualities of creativity I looked at, which I will use for my definition, you know, keeping an open mind, being flexible, being strong, being determined, motivated, giving up senseless fears.
Oh, love that.
Or learning, you know, if you have a fear, then maybe you have to think about how you're going to deal with it and not just let it control you. So the creativity, I guess, is living your best life, being the best that you can be. Every day I wake up and I say, I'm going to be, you know, the best person I can be today. Whatever I do, I'm going to try hard and be my best. And lots of days, you're not your best. You suck, you know, for whatever reason. And that's okay too.
It is, because we're going to mess up and we're going to have those times. And to me, I found it's just kind of a matter of accepting it, laughing it off as much as possible, or just being like, oh, well, you know, whatever. And just kind of moving on to the best that you can. Because the more that you internalize that and take it in is where it just starts to eat away.
Yes. Yes. You just can't dwell on it.
You can't.
You can't. I would say you can't woulda, shoulda, coulda, because it's done.
Yes.
Son, you learn from your mistakes, you learn from your experiences, and you move on.
Yeah. So I think it's a really important point to kind of put out there to the audience, to people listening to the replay, to people here, is that what can you do today to just be your best? What is that little thing that you can do today for yourself, for others? Even if it's giving people compliment, calling up that person that you haven't spoken to in a really long time that you've been thinking of, or texting them, or buying somebody some flowers, or just what are you going to do for you? What's that? How are you going to nurture yourself? Like, what does that look like in your life? Because you need to do this. It feels good, and it's good connection.
Yes, and be a good person in your community. You know, I try to pick up trash along the way as I'm running, because I know where all the trash cans are, and I hate litter.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and whatever, just be a good person for everybody.
So, Lauren, I am so, so grateful for you taking this time. It has been so amazing talking to you.
Oh, thank you, Hollis. You know, I've known you for a long time, and I'm so proud of all of your accomplishments and how you've, you know, morphed your career into what you want it to be.
Thank you.
Terrific. You have not pigeonholed yourself. You've moved up and onward and into different areas, and that's great.
Thank you. I really appreciate it. I really, really appreciate it. And yeah, so this space is all about inspiring, connecting, and sharing stories. So please like, follow, share, so we can just spread the positivity and get these stories out there. So I wish you a good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are in this world. And we'll be talking to you really soon again. So goodbye, everybody.
Bye, Hollis. Hugs to you.
Bye. Hugs to you. Bye.
Feeling inspired? There are so many ways to do things for you, to get yourself moving, to get your creative juices flowing, and to have fun. Check out I Am Creative and Express Yourself Publishing. Go to iamcreativephilly.com, iamcreativephilly, PHILLY.com, and check out the experiential kits. Check out Creative Shway, which is all about creative inspiration and guidance. And for Express Yourself Publishing, there's so many multi-author book opportunities. So I would love to chat with you so much. Everybody's creative. Everybody has a voice. Everybody has an expression. And I can't wait to meet you. Thank you so much for taking this hour to listen to our stories and share the energy. And I wish you a wonderful morning, afternoon, evening, wherever you are in this world. Bye, everybody.